It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. It's Tuesday, January 21. James Hamm there. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube Omnipresent. They sponsor the program. A big shout out to Jiffy Lube. In fact, shouting out Jiffy Lube is what we're going to do right now, sort of. So we have various insiders hoodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones that D'Lo and KC had made and that are on their site. And then we have ones that Jiffy Lube made for a giveaway last year and then a giveaway this year. And we'll give you a code word for that giveaway in a bit if you want this exclusive insiders hoodie that you cannot buy and you can only win via this contest, or if you work here and you ask me and James / promotions if you can have one. So our promotions team is delightful. I love them all. I love when people say, I wore my insiders hoodie to this place, and someone was like, James and Kyle, love those guys. Our buddy Karosh, who works here in sales, does it. He's like,
Every time he wears it.
He's like, every time I wear it. Coffee shop, he went to a poker night, and there's just always somebody who's like, hey, James and Kyle loves it. And that's awesome. Like, it is unbelievably humbling every single time that anyone cares enough about what you and I have to say to point out to somebody wearing the sweatshirt that, like, I listen to them. That's sick. So I'm down at promotions today. I'm letting Jackie, who puts in the code word for you all for at ESPN1320.com at the contest page. I was telling her the code word for today, and we were kind of chit-chatting about the game. And Megan, also in promotions,
mm-hmm.
She goes, oh, hey, I have a story to tell you that's work-related. I wore my insider's hoodie to a party this weekend. And I'm like, oh, Who listens? And she goes, yeah, it was a marketing party, and everybody just noticed the Jiffy Lube logo on the sleeve.
Well, that's amazing. That's spectacular.
So a big shout out to Jiffy Lube. Just a hard left turn on what I was like. I was like getting ready to do the whole like, oh, that's so cool. Like, what's her name?
That's
like,
amazing.
What's her name? We'll shout them out. Like, do that whole like that awkward thing that because I don't know what to do in that moment. I'm like, this is the coolest thing anyone's ever said to me. I don't know how to respond. And instead, it was, yeah, people love the Jiffy Lube. Honestly.
Well, those people out there at that marketing meeting, if they want to buy us stuff to give away on the air and pay us for it, we're in.
We will do that.
We're
happy to do that. We will slap a logo on a sleeve of whatever.
That's right.
Shout out to Jiffy Lube and a big salute to our promotion staff as well. They do such a great job. Speaking of doing a great job, the Kings are doing that right now.
My goodness. Good segue.
Holy cow. Thank you. Professional. man, starting, so there was the 22-23 season and then the first six games of the playoffs. And then starting in game 7 against the Warriors through the first Doug Christie game in LA now feels like a weird bender.
Mm.
Because now the way the team is playing, the energy they play with, the just general vibe of the team, Keon Ellis, immaculate vibes, right? Like, it all feels very 22-23, not necessarily from an aesthetic standpoint, but from just like a oh, hey, they're back. They're back on this upward trajectory that they look to be on after 22-23. They're back there. And everything that happened from game 7 until their last 11 games feels so foreign and different.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wrap my brain around why. Is it literally just because they've won 9 of their last 11?
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of the great mysteries what happened to this team.
It's so weird.
It is weird how they just lost their way and then found their way again. And to be honest, Kyle, not everybody's found their way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter. The team itself, the soul of the team, has found its way.
Yeah.
And it's really an interesting thing to watch because it's like, hey, they aren't firing on all cylinders. They still have guys who are missing shots all over the place.
Yeah.
They still have guys who aren't having great games. And it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess you get away with that when you play Washington. Sure, you get, but when you play Houston or when you play Boston and you're missing De'Aaron Fox playing Boston, it does, like, you still go out there and beat them. That's really impressive.
That's why it's insane. Mm-hmm. We can't just point to, oh, well, and Keegan's shooting it better. Don't get me wrong. But it's not like he's shooting 80% on 10 threes a game. It's not like De'Aaron Fox is suddenly averaging 35. Even the Wizards game, you said, you know, you mentioned beating the Wizards is not some great feat. They have still yet to lose a game by one possession, by the way. But even the Wizards game, I kept waiting for that moment where it went in danger. That moment of, uh-oh. And it was just a methodical beatdown.
Mm-hmm.
There was never, they let go of the rope for a minute. Oh, man, they needed that 50-50 ball went their way. They got lucky on that. Just kept cruising along. Didn't take the team lightly. Just beat the hell out of them. Okay, next one. The mindset shift is just, I don't want to say baffling because we knew it was there. It's largely the same group of players from the 22-23 season.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the same key players. And I can't wait to see where this goes because I can't wait for whatever this season has in store, whether it's a play-in exit or an NBA championship, whatever the end of the season has in store, I can't wait to find out what people think happened.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think a lot of times, though, when you get into these situations, you have no idea how you got there and you have no idea how you got out of it. Mm-hmm. And all I know is it feels like, you know, again, Doug Christie has got like a torch and he's walking through a dark area and the team is following him. And he's leading them right out of the dark area. And I don't know how else, like we've talked about different types of, you know, metaphors here, like mm-hmm. what's happening sure. here.
We're big on metaphors.
But it's, for me,
even meta fives.
Like I don't know how it's working mm-hmm. because it is the same group of players and they still have the same holes and you still see the same deficiencies. It's just that they don't matter. And so I know that positivity can do that for a group and you know, watching Doug work mm-hmm. is like a master's class in positivity. Mm-hmm. Even he was asked about Kevin Huerter this weekend and like said, hey, look, Kevin's part of this thing. You know, we're pulling for Kevin. We expect him to go out there and make shots. We're just going to keep putting our arm around him. And, you know he's doing the work and we'll try to get him through this. And it's kind of funny, but it's almost every player, you know, people are like, hey, look at, you know, De'Aaron Fox had an off night. He goes, he had an off night. He had 12 assists.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he was leading the entire team without having to score. That's mm-hmm. not an off night. It's just not a heavy scoring night.
Right.
And so there are all of these things that, you know, he's able to turn a phrase very quickly when it comes to somebody not living up to their, you know, their productivity for whatever, whether it's a night or whether it's half the season. Mm-hmm. He just has a way of like making it feel like it's okay and it's positive. And it's like it's a gift to have that. But it seems to be working for some reason.
It's like, is that it? Is that all it was? I can't. Like, I get that it's, and again, we have to see where this goes.
Yep.
Because maybe they finish a couple of games above 500 and they're out in the first playing game and we suddenly feel a lot different about the future of the team. But right now, where we sit on January 21 with the information that we have, I can't fathom that it was just, because like you said, changing head coaches mid-season doesn't usually work.
No.
That is the sign that, hey, there's a larger problem here. Coach is it's much easier to replace a coach than it is an entire mm-hmm. front office or anything else. So coach is going to go first, and then we'll kind of see where it goes. It doesn't turn into a 9-2 across 11-game stretch immediately.
Never. And I mean, like, I've watched one coach after another walk in and say, this whole home losing thing is ridiculous. I can't believe this is happening. How do you not win on your home court? And like everybody says it. Like Alvin Gentry, like pounding on the table, so angry that they were embarrassing themselves in front of their home crowd. The Kings are 6-0 under Doug Christie. Like, at home. They haven't lost yet at home. And they went from six games under 500 to back to 500 at home in a six-game stretch.
Insane.
It's absolutely wild, and you're sitting there like, okay, how come no one else... Like, we talked about this, Kyle, in the past. I thought that there are two ways that the Kings could get way better.
Mm-hmm.
Even last year, coming into the season, what are the two ways the Kings can get better? They can get better defensively.
Yep.
Because they were horrible defensively in the 2022-23 season and just happened to win. And the other way is that they could win more games at home. If this team could win 30 games at home, they're a 50-something win team.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even win 30 games at home right now because of their first 31 games.
That's crazy.
They can't get to that. They can't get to the 30 win mark. So they're what, 14-14? And I think that's what they are. Something like that. Man. I think the best they can get is 29 wins.
Man.
So like it's such a struggle to watch a team lose at home because that's where you should find success, especially with a great crowd like this. Somehow Doug walks in the door and says, "We're not losing at home anymore. This is my city and you're not going to lose here." And sure enough, there they are, like, all right, well, I guess we're not allowed to lose at home. It's like, where was that, like, early this season when they were losing to bad teams all over the place?
Man, I don't think Mike Brown is a bad basketball coach, but whatever he was doing, whatever he was selling, whatever he was saying, just wasn't hitting. And
yeah.
Whatever buttons Doug started pushing emotionally or from a practice schedule standpoint or whatever it is, man. Are we putting Doug in the coach of the year conversation?
Oh, wow. Well, if this keeps
up. If they get to a top four seed, you have to.
You have to at least consider it.
It has to be. I know Jamal Mosley's done an incredible job in Orlando, and and what Kenny Atkinson has done in Cleveland has been remarkable, too.
Yep.
But
well, that
you get this team that was firing its coach 30 games into the year to a four seed in the West.
I don't think the NBA coaches are going to vote for that, but that's okay. I'll tell you, there's a moment years ago, my second season covering the team when came out of the lockout, and during the lockout, the Kings had Paul Westphal go out and like he would do basketball 101 clinics at like local gyms.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had a giant whiteboard and he would sit there, he'd map out, he had a booklet, everyone got all these pages. Fans are literally learning the game from Paul Westphal.
Mm-hmm.
They got about, I don't know, 15 games into the season. I don't even think it was that. I think it was 9 games into the season. And they fired Paul. But they fired Paul for, he decided on a Sunday to release something to the press that just demolished DeMarcus Cousins. Called him the most unprofessional, you know, like it was a long, page long of just grievances against a young player who would not under any circumstance fall in line and be part of a team, right?
Yeah.
It was bad. And so, I mean, there's some weirdness that goes on here where, again, he had handed that to management and management okayed it for it to go out to the press and all this stuff. And then when they fired him the next day, Jeff Petrie called it a philosophical vacation. And Jeff Petrie's a man who could spin it. He loved to talk and in very tight settings where everyone's eyes were on him. And he loved to come up with interesting things like that. And I don't know that I've ever heard that again. But it sure does feel like this team, this group of players, went on a philosophical vacation for about a year.
I'm calling it a philosophical bender.
Yeah, there it is.
That's what that was.
Yeah.
Because they're just back. It's like, okay, we're back.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. Oh, we're here. We're here now. We got to go to the roof. We got to see. Okay, yeah. We'll just start winning. We'll just start winning here? Yeah. We're back. It's wild. I've never seen anything like this. And every game, I'm not surprised that the Kings beat the hell out of the Wizards. We said it on, it's Wizards stink. They're on the second night of a back-to-back. Like, go crush that team. And they just did. And I'm not shocked by that. what I'm shocked by is just the consistent night in, night out. Just, this is a different team. It's the same dudes. It's a different team. It's phenomenal. It's so much more fun to watch. This is such a more fun way to go about a basketball season than whatever that used to be.
Well, I'll tell you, the team that they lost to, that they beat, they lost last year 109-102. And it's the same horrific Wizards team. The Wizards won 15 games last season.
Yep.
One of those games was against the Sacramento Kings. Your Detroit Pistons, they beat the Sacramento Kings last year. And again, that team was not good. That team was not good at all. The Charlotte Hornets last year, 111-104. The Charlotte Hornets won 21 games, and they beat the Sacramento Kings last year. So, like, jeez, look, we talk about, hey, you know, yeah, they could have lost, or they, you know, the Portland Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. How many games did they win last year? I do know that they beat the Sacramento 20? Kings. Yeah, something right around there. Last year, 21-61.
Man.
You lost to a 15-win team, two 21-win teams, and we haven't even got to the Detroit Pistons yet. You lost to those teams last year. So when you say, hey, you know, we didn't expect them to lose to Washington, but then they did lose to Washington last year. They did lose to bad teams early this season. And mm-hmm. So we can point to it and say, yeah, this is a sign of growth. It's a good thing that you were able to win a game that was wasn't wire to wire, but it was close to wire to wire, and it never felt in doubt at all.
Not one time.
Nope.
Did I, you know, that uneasy, like, uh-oh, like, this 15-point lead got down to 8 real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Never once. Mm. Never. That's what I said about the Rockets game, too. Never felt, even as their 9-point lead went to 2 in 90 seconds or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even that, I was like, nah, they got it. Like, I feel good about where they're at. Man, it's just...
The Pistons won 14 different games last season.
Dang, they've already surpassed last season's total win total by a lot.
You lost to a 14, a 15, and two 21-win teams.
Ugh.
So
three of those at home?
Yeah. I think three of them were at
home. The Pistons and the Hornets were definitely at home.
Yeah, I'd have to look up the rest.
Anyways.
I think Washington could have been on the road late in the season. It was on the road.
The Kings are now half a game back of Dallas for the number 7 seed. 2 back in the loss column from the Lakers for the number 6 seed. Unfortunately, because of the way that season series went, you're going to have to pass the Lakers in the standings because they have the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
If the Kings win their next 3, which they very well can, you get a struggling Golden State team that is happy to be struggling. You have Denver the next night on the road, and then you have the Knicks.
Well, that's going to be tough.
It's a brutal stretch. But if you win the next 3, I'm not putting anything past them at this point.
Okay.
But yeah, they might also go 1-2. But if you win your next 3, you could be in the top 6 by Sunday.
Huh.
That's crazy.
The fact that they're like a half game out of 7 right now is just wild.
It's ridiculous.
And we were talking about this a little bit before. I kind of have this feeling that the West is not nearly as good as everyone thought. And I know injuries have played a part in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that it's just not nearly as good. Like, what we're seeing from the Western Conference is not what I expected. It's not like every single night is some knockdown, drag-out battle between two Western Conference giants.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a lot of bad basketball. Like, this season specifically, I think we've seen a ton of marginal basketball being played around the league, let alone, you know, within the Western Conference. And the fact that the Kings, like, went 6 games under 500 and have already figured out a way to move back into the 7th spot. Like, it is wild. It's wild.
Yeah, in the West, it's Oklahoma City 1. Oklahoma City is as good as we thought they would be. They're 35-7.
That's it.
Houston has made a leap.
Yep.
They're 28-14, good team. Memphis, 28-15, but banged up. But they've definitely taken a leap. But then Denver, like, Denver's good, but not this inevitable machine that they were. The Clipers are 24-18, but I'm not a team that on a nightly basis I go, man, is that a title contender?
Like, yeah.
No, they're probably just a playoff team. The Lakers, not impressive. The Mavericks, super banged up, worse than I expected them to be.
Mm-hmm.
The Timberwolves struggling to integrate Julius Randle like we thought they would. The Suns are just...
went and got old.
Not good. Like that, Kevin Durant's awesome. Devin Booker struggling a little bit. Bradley Beal hates it there. Golden State regressed a lot. San Antonio is better, but not taking a leap. Like, there's just... New Orleans is 20 games under 500 after beating the Kings six times last year.
I don't know why there are friends in the chatty house are telling us the Eagle is playing on 1320 right now.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't know what that means. 96.9, the Eagle is on 1320 at the moment. I'm just saying, and that's what they're saying in the chatty house.
Okay, let me just let me make sure. What do you think about all of those teams, James? Who is underperforming in the West? Do you answer that question while I take a look and make sure I have this right?
Okay. Yeah, I'm like, look, you know, when you're looking at Western Conference teams for me, I mean, they're the only team that's like fully, well, there's two teams that are overperforming, and that is the Houston Rockets and the Memphis Grizzlies. And I think that those teams are totally overperforming and they've come out of nowhere to be where they are in the standings. That doesn't mean that they can't continue that. I would just like when the games start getting a lot more difficult in the next couple of months, I expect them to take a bit of a slide. I don't think Memphis is anywhere near the 28-15 record that they're currently pacing at. Denver is a team that I think we all thought would be in the top 3-4 teams. We just didn't think that they're really a title contender anymore, but that's okay. You know, it's like they've had their run and we're kind of seeing the back end of it, it feels like a little bit.
We're seeing how far Nikola Jokic can carry a basketball team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that is a team that just kept losing pieces and you kept having guys fill in and they don't look that much different. And it's like, yeah, but they are different. And the fact that they're no longer on the bench to help mm-hmm. out hurts his team. And so I think, you know, we've seen like sort of the standard with what happens when a team gets really good and then the like 3-4 years once they start to decline.
But then again with Denver, they lose to Boston by 12. Then they beat the Clippers by 23. They beat the hell out of the Nets. They beat the Mavs by 11 and then 19 on consecutive nights or consecutive games, Sunday and then Tuesday. They lose by 20 to the Rockets, but then they beat the Heat by 20 on the road, and they beat the Magic by 13 on the road. Like, they're scary, but not this top three seed, I think, that a lot of people thought they would be going into the year. Yeah, man, I don't know if it's injury stuff. I don't know if it's, like, is Minnesota as easy as, yeah, you swapped out Karl Anthony Towns for Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo, and you got worse?
Yeah, it's wild. And now Dante DiVincenzo's out long, long term.
Yeah, man.
He got hurt.
That's a... I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of how it goes. I wouldn't, like... There's not a team in the West that, should the Kings make the postseason, that I look at it and I'm like, man, that's the team you want to play. But there's also no team outside of Oklahoma City that I look at and go, that's not a team you want smoke with.
Well, that's the deal. It's Oklahoma City and...
It just...
2 through 9
all feel very, it's a gettable conference, man.
No, I totally agree.
I should say it's a climbable conference. I don't want to get out. I don't want to get over my skis with expectations and be like, well, I don't know why in the West you couldn't just make the conference finals. Sure, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't want it to be like if they get to the second round and lose, it's not a disappointment. That's
yeah.
So I'm trying to temper my expectations. It's very fun right now, but let's see what it looks like in March.
No, I totally agree. The fact that they can climb right now to me is just, it's on the Western Conference. It's on the teams around them that just didn't put them away. And now you're seeing, you know, where the Kings have an opportunity. Now they also have, you said it, they have a game against the Golden State Warriors tomorrow, followed by a back-to-back in Denver. So mm-hmm. people know that Denver back-to-back, especially when you're going to Denver, is one of the worst in the league because there's a couple of things going against you. Number one, the hotel is an hour away from the airport. Number two, there's usually inclement weather. Number three, you lose an hour in the time zone switch. So if you're playing in Sacramento tomorrow night, you're not going to get on the plane until almost midnight. It's a like 2-3 hour, 2.5-3 hour flight. You get to Denver, you lose an hour, you have an hour bus ride. Next thing you know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. And so that's how you kick off a road trip, and that's not going to be simple. And then it does get tough. It's Denver. I mean, it's a Knicks after Denver, and you've got the Nets right after that, but you know they play hard. Mm-hmm. You got 76ers, but you don't know if Embiid's going to be back and what that team's mm-hmm. going to look like. Like, it is a tough road trip, and so I don't want to, what you say, get out over your skis. I totally agree, Kyle. Like,
you've brought the Denver weather thing to my attention, and it distracted me. Sorry.
Oh, yeah?
On Wednesday, it's a low of 12, and on Thursday, it's a low of 9. Good news, though, no snow.
Oh, no snow.
Travel should be okay.
No, but you just have to drive in the snow. I mean, in the ice to get to your your destination. An hour bus ride in icy weather. So that hour bus ride could take an hour and a half, 2 hours. Just saying, Kyle. Yeah.
Golly.
Well, that and you're playing at elevation. That's the other thing.
Right, which also sucks.
Yeah.
Like Jill Adge says in the chat here, like, you need to win tomorrow, and we'll talk about that game tomorrow. You get Golden State tomorrow, they're struggling, but then that back-to-back against Denver, then you got to go to New York with just one day of rest to kick off that road trip. Like you said, that's tough. And yeah. if you get sloppy and you're looking ahead to Denver and you lose to Golden State, now you got a chance to lose three in a row. Now it gets ugly. But we'll keep talking about that. I'm optimistic about the direction the Kings are headed for the first time in a long time. I'm not optimistic about the 49ers defensive coordinator situation.
Oh.
This is turning into a mess. Before we dive back into the Kings, I want to talk about the Niners DC situation because it was looking a little sketchy, but okay, they're in a good spot. After some news that broke this weekend, I don't think they're in a good spot anymore. We'll tell you why next. He's James, I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you till noon here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I don't want to brag, but I won a lineup on Underdog this weekend. It was a really big deal for me. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'd gone 0-10.
Oof.
Do you know how hard it is to lose 10 consecutive lineups with Underdog's Pick'em game?
Yeah, because even when I was playing all the time last year, I could, you know, do enough six picks that eventually I would win one.
You just run into one, right?
Yeah.
I was doing 3 and 4 thinking, all right, and I do the flex play so I can lose one and I can still win some money. Nope. Consistently losing 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
Hard to do. Really hard to do. But this weekend with Underdog's Pick'em game, you pick higher or lower on at least 2 player stats. Super easy. I got on the board. On Sunday, I had Kyren Williams higher than 2.5 receptions. He did not get there for the Rams, but had an easy one. Puka Nacua higher than 0.5 reception on the first drive. That hit. Mm-hmm. It looked like it wasn't going to because it looked like the Rams are going to go 3 and out. And there was a low completion to Tyler Higbee, their tight end. It was called incomplete. Bang. Sean McVay got my back, though. Reviewed that. It's a catch. Drive goes on. Puka Nacua grabs a couple of receptions. So that was a winner. Then I had Jalen Hurts higher than 41.5 rushing yards. He had a 44-yard rushing touchdown to open the scoring. Bang. Nailed that one. And then Saquon Barkley higher than 18.5 for his longest rush. Yeah, 62-yard touchdown, 78-yard touchdown. Took care of that. I got 3 out of 4. I won some money and had a great time doing it. You can play along with me on the Underdog app. Sign up now with promo code KYLEM and deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. That's promo code KYLEM. Must be 18 plus and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. You know what I'm concerned with? The 49ers defensive coordinator situation.
Yeah, that's not great.
I want to talk Kings trade stuff, but what San Francisco has done, they have fired I have to get to this first. They've fired defensive coordinators in back-to-back years, which is not what you want to do. Not what you want, as the kids say.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Shanahan says, looking for continuity, looking for a veteran defensive coordinator, because they don't want to bring in somebody who's never been a defensive coordinator before, where you now have to go through the growing pains that Nick Sorensen went through.
Mm-hmm.
So an experienced defensive coordinator, and they want somebody to build continuity, because the defensive players don't love that there's a new coordinator every year, so they want to build that continuity. Robert Saleh went to the top of their list. And according, if you piece together different pieces of reporting and such, it went Robert Saleh, and then in some order, Jeff Ulbrich and Dennis Allen were their top three candidates. They also interviewed Deshae Townsend, the Detroit Lions defensive backs coach who's never been a DC, and they also interviewed Brandon Staley, their assistant head coach who didn't get the job last year. Okay. Here's the problem. Jeff Ulbrich never interviewed with the 49ers. He's being hired by the Falcons. Dennis Allen never interviewed with the 49ers. He's being hired by the Bears, or he's the front runner to be hired by the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Johnson, their new head coach. And then news came down yesterday that Robert Saleh is one of three coaches getting a second interview with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Ooh, I really want Robert Saleh.
Yeah, the Niners do too.
Yeah.
And I don't, and maybe, look, maybe they know. Maybe they have a really great, some great intel that says, hey, Bob Saleh's not getting that job. And maybe that's why they've not interviewed anybody else. Maybe that's why people haven't wanted to interview. I shouldn't say that's why. I don't know that people haven't wanted to interview. Maybe people haven't wanted to interview because they know, hey, you know what? That's Robert Saleh's gig.
Yeah.
Same deal with the offensive coordinator. Everybody knows Clay Kubiak's the offensive coordinator. The Niners just have to go through a interview process. They interviewed one guy so far. So maybe the Niners have this all on lock and Saleh's going to be the DC and everything's going to be fine. But if it's not, this process is horrific. They've settled on three dudes. Two of them never interviewed. They're gone. And the guy at the top of the list might get a head coaching job that would prevent him from joining you in San Francisco, leaving you with a guy who's never been a defensive coordinator before and a guy you didn't want to hire last year who has 1 year as a defensive coordinator, and that's Brandon Staley.
Mm.
This could be a mess, bro.
I wonder, like, once everything, all the dust settles here, because there are coaches that are still in the running for jobs right now because they're still in the playoffs and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the process here sped up because the Lions got bounced and all of a sudden their coordinators are available today as opposed to 2-3 weeks from now,
mm-hmm.
right? So it does feel like all of a sudden things have gone crazy. But once the dust settles, I'm sure that there's going to be some options,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what you really want to be, the place you want to be. If you're a great team mm-hmm. or a team that believes that you can be great again, you need high-level coordinators. You can't dabble with guys that may or may not work out. That's just not the way it should go. And if I'm Robert Saleh, like, the Jags job isn't a horrible job by NFL standards, mm-hmm. but it's not a good job.
Sure.
And if I'm him, I would rather rebuild my value one more time mm-hmm. with the 49ers, get them back on the right path. You know that, you know, like a couple of tweaks here and there, and that team all of a sudden is winning 11 games again.
Sure.
And you can be part of the reason why they won all those games. And the next season, go back into the field where there's a better job that's available that you're not just going to get fired in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, that's what's kind of interesting is you mentioned the Jags job being a kind of good job. And I think I agree because I believe in Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is at the very least good quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that situation set. You know you have a quarterback who's been paid, but you have to work with Trent Baalke. And you have to deal with whatever shenanigans are going on in that front office because now apparently Trent Baalke is reporting to somebody else.
Uh-oh.
I guess. I'm with you because for Robert Saleh, who didn't have a good record with the Jets. He had 20-36, is that what it was? It wasn't great.
No.
So this was your next head coaching opportunity is probably your last chance. And you want to take it. Like, that's why these guys coach. Like, you want to run a team that is, and if he gets that opportunity, he will be getting paid handsomely and he'll get to be the head coach. But on the other hand, do you really want to go be the head coach for a Trent Baalke team where you might win 12 games in 2 years and get fired and maybe that's it? That's your last crack?
That's tough.
It's really tough.
Mm-hmm.
But, frankly, that matters less to me than the 49ers could be left sitting here with Robert Saleh getting the Jags job, and they don't have any ideas about what they're going to do at coordinator. A very important spot, mind you, because our defense was ass this year.
Yeah, you're too good of a team to be in that situation.
It's
too
so
good of a
silly
franchise to be in that situation.
If this was the Dallas Cowboys were doing this, if this was Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys setting their sights on one guy who might get a job that disqualifies him from being your DC, or just puts him out of the running, just flat out.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a head coach or a defensive coordinator. If this was the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones, we'd be like, what an idiot. Why are you doing this? Why are you not stacking up interviews so you're ready to go where Saleh gets that job? Okay, you have your short list behind him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand, especially given how last year went, especially given that last year they had to fall back on Nick Sorensen, the internal candidate, and it was a disaster. I don't know how you're doing this 2 years in a row.
So
it's such bad process.
Who's at fault here? Because I see people blaming Lynch and I see people blaming Kyle Shanahan in the chat. And mm-hmm. to me, I mean, I'm used to the NBA where NBA head coaches get to handpick their entire staff. Mm-hmm. They're like, if even the Doug Christie situation here in Sacramento, when Mike got the job,
mm-hmm.
they went to Mike and said, Mike, would you allow Doug to remain on the staff
sure.
from the previous staff?
Mm-hmm.
And Mike said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay, that's fine. I'll do it. That doesn't happen everywhere. And also they're like, it can get contentious where a coach can say, yeah, I'm not going to hire your guy, or no, I'm not going to fire that coach
mm-hmm.
Because you want to shake things up. Mm-hmm. There's all of these things that happen. And, you know, there's even a previous time years ago when Doug Christie was almost hired onto the staff under George Karl, and George Karl said no. They didn't have a good relationship previously, and George was told he had to let go of one of his staff members, and he did, and Vance Wahlberg. And then they wanted to fill that void with another coach. And George Karl said, it's written in my contract that I get to choose my own assistants. Mm-hmm. I say no, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's a awkward situation.
I believe that it's Kyle Shanahan's decision.
Yeah.
If Kyle Shanahan wanted to hire me, if Kyle Shanahan said, you know what? I was listening to 1320 the other day, and that Kyle Madsen had some good ideas. I'm going to bring him in. That would put they'd put the kibosh on that.
Plus, they switched over to 96.9 for a little bit, and I got to hit my 70s jams.
You got to rock out with Justin Case.
That's
awesome.
Right. It was right. So bring in Kyle. He brings the vibes and 96.9 with him.
If he was doing something like that, I think Lynch in the front office and ownership would step in and be like, no,
yeah.
that no. But if it's an NFL coach, I don't think if Kyle Shanahan just went to Shea Townsend's the guy. I don't think anybody's stepping in and telling him no on that.
No, I mean, that's where you need to have people around you that are willing to say the right things,
yeah.
that aren't yes men, that are like, okay, if he's the guy, why is he the guy? I need you to like list why you think he's the guy, and then let's walk through this.
And maybe, and like I said, maybe because again, I'm viewing this from very much the outside looking in. Maybe the Niners know and Saleh knows that he is not getting the Jags job.
Mm. Okay.
Like, maybe he just, that's not the cards for him, and that's why the Niners are operating this way. But, man, if he gets that job, it's going to be, because even guys like Lou Anarumo, Bengals defensive coordinator, who was so good for so many years, got fired.
Mm-hmm.
He got hired away yesterday to the Colts. It's like, man.
Yeah.
You're running out of coaches that check all the boxes of experience and previous success and running your scheme and all this other stuff. It's dicey, man. It's very, very dicey. And it's something I'm keeping a very close eye on
mm-hmm.
because this could determine a lot of what happens to the 49ers next season.
Yeah. I mean, it's huge. I mean, the 49ers have, without Saleh and without who is their next coordinator, the head coach for
D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah, D'Amico Ryans.
Mm-hmm.
They have struggled on that side of the ball. I mean, it's very clear the coaching
flat out
did help, and it was impactful. And, you know, like, you should probably settle in on a guy. And it's tough because when you have success as a franchise,
mm-hmm.
you get your coordinator stolen all the time.
Right.
And that's why you're in this situation right now. That's mm-hmm. why, you know, Saleh was head coach with the Jets, and, you know, McDaniel's head coach with the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Like, you just keep getting your coordinators, you know, they go and get bigger and better jobs.
Clint Kubiak, the Saints offensive coordinator. You've got Bobby Slowick, the Texans offensive coordinator. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
So to that point, just expanding on it, and we've talked about this before, but as important as finding a defensive coordinator is finding somebody internally that you want to groom to be your next DC.
Yeah.
Somebody who's around, who knows the team, who knows the scheme, who knows the players, that, let's say Robert Saleh gets hired. Let's go to that world. Robert Saleh gets hired. The Niners win 11 games next year. They make another deep playoff run. Their defense is top five. Robert Saleh is right back at the top of the coaching market.
Yep.
And he's very likely getting hired. You can't then go, oh, shoot, another certain, like, no, you need it. Like with D'Amico Ryans, they knew D'Amico Ryans was like, man, he's in every meeting. He's taking notes. This guy is working towards being a defensive coordinator. And when Robert Saleh left, they said, no problem. Here goes D'Amico.
The heir apparent.
Yes.
Yes.
And they knew that from the moment Bob Saleh got an interview. They went, D'Amico Ryans is the guy. If he gets his job, D'Amico Ryans stepping in. They got to find that guy. I don't know if they have him. They might not. But that has to be the next step. Along with finding their next defensive coordinator. So we'll be keeping a very close eye on the head coaching carousel because it could have a dramatic impact on San Francisco. All right. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you until noon. I watched so much football this weekend. It was great.
Yeah?
I want to go through each of the divisional playoff games with you.
Okay.
Because we didn't do a show yesterday for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So I would like to go through these now.
Okay.
The Chiefs beat the Texans. I don't buy the NFL conspiracy theories. I don't. Like, I don't want to get into why. I just don't.
Okay.
I also thought all the stuff about, like, the league favors Mahomes and the Chiefs. I also think that's silly. Like, no, they're just a really good team, man. The rest can make a call here or there, but it just doesn't track right. It got really hard during that game on Saturday to talk around the people who were like, look, they very clearly want Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce to win. Look at these calls. A couple of those roughing the passer calls, there was the roughing the passer
uh-huh.
on Will Anderson where he pushed Patrick Mahomes down. They said there was contact to the head. I never saw an angle that showed that. But easy, they throw the flag on that. And then the one where Mahomes is scrambling around
and then
in the middle of the field just falls down. Never gets hit, by the way. And they just toss a 15-yard penalty out there.
Yeah.
That was tough, man. And again, not that I believe that the NFL said, hey, make sure that. But when people want to make that argument, it was really hard to look at Saturday's game and go, well, no, let's relax. Because that was not how it went.
I would say, though, that, like, even the play where he slid out of nowhere, right? He went down, mm-hmm. and the two guys flew over the top. There was contact, but there's also, they made contact with each other.
Yes.
Like, it looked like helmets hit.
Yes.
And you could see a way in which they would call, like, helmet-to-helmet contact. And you would like it for roughing a running back, a runner. But mm-hmm. the problem is that he is a runner in that situation. He
yes.
had gone past the line of scrimmage. Yes. And so officially he can be hit. And if he wants to slide, that's fine. But he didn't slide in any regular way.
Exactly.
But still, if you look at the play, like in the moment as it's happening, like super bang, bang,
mm-hmm.
you could see how it looked like they hit helmets.
I totally. And I agree with that. But then you go watch some of the other things that happened around the league.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterbacks getting pushed out of bounds, quarterbacks getting dragged down by a horse collar, hip drop tackles, and nothing.
Yeah.
And when you start piecing all those together and you see all these crazy Instagram reels or whatever about, like, look at all these calls they didn't make and look at all these two.
Yeah.
Again, I don't buy into it. If I had to bet money that the league called down and said, hey, make sure Patrick Mahomes win, I'd bet against it. But I'm just saying, I'm not going to argue with those people this weekend or after this weekend.
Yeah.
I did not. I thought that was ridiculous. But also, Houston had a fourth down early in the fourth quarter where they had it on Kansas City's 40 and they had a fourth and 10. And they had no idea what they were doing. It's like you've got guys lined up in the wrong spot and they're moving around. Play clock's ticking down. Call a timeout. If you're going to go for it on fourth and 10 from the opponent's 40, which I don't hate, you were down a touchdown at that point. And you know, man, hey, if we punt it back, they might mow down and score and this game's over. They could take 8 minutes off the clock and then it's super over. Okay, all right, I don't hate the logic here. But it was a meltdown from Houston that I think is derived from, and this is where I think a lot of the Chiefs winning comes from, is the Chiefs are really good. A. B. You get into situations like this where teams do things they would not normally do because they're trying to overcome the Chiefs. And so the Texans got into this fourth and 10 where that's not a typical spot. Fourth and 10, even on the opponent's 40, you're not going for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. But they decide, okay, we have to go. And now there's panic because they've not repped this. They don't know exactly what they're doing. You got to call a timeout there. You have to stop the clock and go, if we're running this play, we need to make sure we're doing it exactly right. And CJ Stroud takes a 16-yard sack, and that was ostensibly the ball game.
Yeah.
But I think that's more what happens with Kansas City, is teams get, not scared, but teams get out of their element. Teams think, we can't beat Kansas City doing what we normally do. We have to go above and beyond our normal game script or something we would do normally in this situation, and it throws teams off. And I think that's part of the reason that the Chiefs have been so successful.
Yeah, I think it is. And to be honest with you, Kyle, I think when you walk into a game against the Chiefs, you feel like you have to throw a perfect game.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't. Because like 3 years ago, yeah, you had to throw a perfect game against the Chiefs. But the way the Chiefs have gone like the last couple of years, they're beatable. Mm-hmm. Nobody does beat them.
Yeah.
But it always feels like someone is trying to take a home run swing.
Yep.
When just a solid base hit would do.
1,000%.
Just start stacking up the base hits and you'll get the run in.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get it. Because it happened too many times this season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they lose one game, right? Mm-hmm. Did they end up with two losses at the
one.
End?
Two, yeah, because they got blown out by the Broncos.
Yeah, at the last game of the season, yeah. Right?
So but 15-2.
15-2. But you can also see that like so many games this season, they're like you take the Niners stats and their stats and put them next to them for a lot of the season, the Niners losing by barely anything and the Chiefs winning by barely anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like it could have swapped easily and the Niners could have been a very good team marching. I don't know if they would have had any, you know, if they would have been able to build something at all, but, you know, the little tiny losses.
Sure.
But with the Chiefs, it was like, oh, you're going to lose this game. Nope, you blocked a field goal.
Right.
Or, oh, they missed a field goal. Or you got a last-second turnover, and then, boom, you hit some crazy play. Even there's a game where Mahomes threw a fourth-quarter pick, and you're like, oh, well, they're going to lose this game.
Right.
He's not playing that well. Everybody swings for the fences against him, just like, oh, you don't need to do that. Just be solid. Yeah.
And good crazy. Team, man. Hard to beat. Mm-hmm. I want to jump to Rams-Eagles real quick. Body bag game. That was a damn football game, bro.
Yeah.
That was so much fun to watch. One of those games that, in my brain, Philly was winning by multiple scores.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look up and the Rams have the ball down 6 with a chance to win in the red zone. Oh my God. That would have been pretty remarkable. But Philadelphia has somehow gotten around the fact that Jalen Hurts is not that good of a quarterback.
Yeah, that was...
Their passing game is ugly, dude.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. They have so many high-quality players, and Jalen Hurts is just good enough, and he's such a good playmaker with his legs that it doesn't matter. The Eagles are good, and they're probably going to go back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That was crazy. We got to see the injury stuff, though. If Jalen Hurts is really messed up with his knee, where he's even a little bit immobile.
Who's back up there?
Kenny Pickett.
Oh.
Or Tanner McKee. Kenny Pickett going to Nick Foles this thing? That would be insane.
Wild.
That's what I'm not here for. I don't need that. I don't need a Kenny Pickett Super Bowl run.
No.
Not even in the slightest. Saquon Barkley's sick, though, man. Hey, it's...
He's so good.
It's... he's just the maximized version of you. Watch when Saquon Barkley signed with the Eagles, it's like, oh man, Saquon might be back. This could be tough. And it's just the best possible version of whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. I think we got the same thing out of Derrick Henry. Just
yeah, good point.
He just didn't have the same caliber of playoff game. Although he wasn't bad. It's just like you can't match the 200 yards. Saquon drops.
When you have 140 yards worth of touchdown runs between the 78 and 62 yarders?
When it's all said and done and they accumulate his entire stats for the season,
yeah,
it's going to be like 2,700 yards total.
It's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, just absolutely wild. He's been so good.
Shout out to running backs.
Yeah.
Yeah, got some good.
Pay those guys.
RBs.
Pay those guys.
Got some good RBs in the conference championship games. We got to talk about Ravens, Bills, and Lamar Jackson. Because the discourse has gotten off the rails again. And then Commanders, Lions. What an insane football game.
Absolutely wild.
And I have so many thoughts about the Commanders and about the Lions and about rookie quarterbacks and everything going on with that game. The Commanders going on to win by 2 touchdowns. Oh, and did I say Jared Goff? Got to talk about Jared Goff, too. Tons to get into there. A big takeaway from the NFC divisional round or the NFL divisional round. For me, the NFL sometimes is not as difficult as we try to make it. Sometimes it comes down to stats like this. The winning teams in the divisional round committed 0 turnovers. The losing teams committed 10. Houston was the only team to lose and not commit multiple turnovers. Sometimes it's that easy, dude.
Simple.
Don't give the ball away. In games where the margins are going to be thin, giving the ball away can kill you.
Yep.
And that's it. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, maybe you don't just like set the ball down on the ground while you're scrambling away from a mess. And maybe
don't have Jameson Williams trying to throw a pass. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of insane. Also, offensive lines matter.
Yes.
Turns out having a good offensive line can get you places.
It does matter, Kyle.
Hopefully the 49ers are taking notes. All right. Tons of Kings trade rumors are out there. And they're starting to churn in the way that makes me think there's actual legs and not just us talking. We'll talk about that next in the second hour. Plus some more NFL divisional round. And mad props to Jesse Tapia. We've got to revisit it. Tough week for us.
Uh-oh.
It's going to be okay, though. We'll talk about all that in the second hour. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 in Sacramento Sports Center.